Welcome everyone to the Star Wars Role-Playing Game Podcast. We're going to be talking about the Saga Edition rules for the Star Wars RPG and how to bring the best of a galaxy far, far away to your gaming table. I'm Rodney Thompson, and I'm in the cockpit without a co-pilot today, so I've asked a friend of mine to join me on this Kessel run of a podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be talking to a good friend of mine and celebrity gamer, Sam Witwer. Sam is an actor whose work is familiar to many of us, and most recently, he was the voice of the Secret Apprentice in the upcoming video game, The Force Unleashed. So sit back, relax, and let's talk about Star Wars. All right, first of all, I just want to welcome you to the podcast. I know that a lot of people are going to be listening to this, and I think it's going to be a really good treat for them. But first, what I'd like to do is get you to tell the audience how they might know you, like what you've worked on. I know what shows you've been on, but it might help some of our audience to know where they've seen you before.
I'm Sam Witwer. The audience might know me from Battlestar Galactica or Dexter, coming up on Smallville as the character Davis Bloom, a.k.a. Doomsday. And then also they might know me from Stephen King's The Mist. And I guess more relevantly, they know me as Darth Vader's Secret Apprentice, Force Unleashed.
Yeah, so that actually segues really well into the next question I had for you. So how was the experience of working on The Force Unleashed? I know I got to talk to you a little bit last year at Celebration about it, and you seemed really excited about it, but what did you think of that whole process?
It was really amazing, Rodney. Basically, we got together and we got to just sort of make our own Star Wars. I mean, it's really no more or less complicated than that. I mean, we got together. We had some of the guys from ILM come down. They created a digital duplicate of me, and then we used motion capture to sort of capture the performances so that the animators would have reference when they did their thing. So we basically shot it the way you'd shoot anything. I mean, it was very akin to a green screen shoot where you don't really have much there, but you do have the most important thing, which is the other actors to work off of, and our cast was great, and we were all there, and we were all shooting together, and, you know, and we had a really great time, and, you know, we just really kind of busted our ass because it's Star Wars, and we really, really wanted to get it right. And then after that shoot, which was like a 2.5-week shoot, I pretty much just came in every now and then and recorded more voiceover for, you know, in-game stuff, and, you know, there was a lot of that to record over the past year and a half, so I had the distinct pleasure of sort of visiting LucasArts, and seeing what they were up to and seeing how the game was coming along over the past year and a half, you know, so it was all fun and games for me. For my buddies over at LucasArts and Lucasfilm, it's just been this, you know, incredible, stressful process, but now that I've played the finished product, I'm thrilled. I mean, it's really amazing.
Well, that's really great. Yeah, I actually got to play the demo the other day and really liked it, and I I ran right out and reserved a copy, so I'm looking forward to seeing how all of your hard work turned out. But
well, you know what's cool about these? Honestly, the demo let me down because I played the full game. I feel like, you know, the demo is kind of lame in comparison to the game, but then, you know, everyone else loves it, so I'm like, oh yeah, I forget. Like, if you don't know, if you haven't played the game, this demo is actually pretty cool.
So are you just saying that because you didn't get as much screen time during the demo?
Right, you didn't have as many lines. Yeah, no, it's actually, you know, that's such a, it's just because, you know, for me, I mean, I guess when I was playing, I was juicing up my certain force abilities, and in that demo, they weren't juiced up the way that I like them, so, you know. So there were certain ways where I'm like, oh, this is weak. You know, like my force push should be sending guys, you know, half a mile in that direction, you know, that type of thing. I was just being a snob about it. But really, you know, the demo is really strong. It's just that the game is a lot stronger than that. So, you know, happy to report that it's a hell of an experience. I actually just had my first feedback. We've gotten a lot of really positive press, and it's, you know, a lot of it hasn't been released yet in the public, but we've been getting it, you know, through Lucasfilm, and I got to sit down with Quint from Ain't It Cool News, and he had played it, and we got to, you know, he went through the whole thing, and we got to talk about it, and that was my first experience of hearing feedback from someone who wasn't through Lucasfilm, and I was really happy with what he had to say. Very, very happy. happy, especially what he had to say about the story and the feel of it and how it really felt like, you know, the original trilogy and all that stuff.
That's really cool. Yeah, in the process of working on the campaign guide for the role-playing game, I got to read the novelization and, of course, the script for the game as well. So I know that you had to have a lot of fun basically starring in your own virtual Star Wars movie.
Oh, absolutely. How did you, how was creating the guide, man? How did that go?
It was actually, it was a lot of fun. Of course, in the process, it meant that you and I got to hang out at Celebration
exactly.
Last year. So, you know, all good there. But actually, that kind of lets me seg into our next question a little bit. One of the reasons that you and I got to meet last year at Celebration was that Saga Edition was just coming out, and we had the core book there, and you came up to me and told me that you're a big fan of the Star Wars role-playing game. So what I'd like to know is, can you tell us a little bit about your current or most recent Star Wars game? Because I know that you're pretty much a big Star Wars role-playing game fan. I'd like to know what you've been doing with it lately.
Well, most recently, okay, so me and my friends, we get together for a trip. We try to do at least one every year. And it's me and seven people that I essentially grew up with. It's like my little brother and my best friend and his little brothers and a whole bunch of other guys that, you know, I have known since as long as I can remember. I mean, they're like my oldest friends. And we all kind of gamed from an early age. You know, when you're like 10 or 11, it's, you know, you're just kind of going slipshod and playing around and doing all kinds of different stuff, playing video games, running around doing sports, and we also played some, like, you know, some 11-year-old versions of, like, D&D and stuff. But when we were, like, in 7th grade, we started doing the West End Games version of Star Wars, and we really got into that because we're all big Star Wars fans. So now, you know, skip ahead however many years later, you know, when we're all adults now, and, you know, everyone's got careers and everything, and we've got, you know, advertising execs and cops and doctors and, you know, in our group, we got together for our sort of reunion and our once a year trip. We went to Galena. We rented a house in Galena, which is 3 hours outside of Chicago, and we had planned to go boating and do this and do that and do all kinds of crazy stuff, and also we had planned to play Star Wars. Well, we got a little bit carried away, and we ended up playing Star Wars the entire time for, like, the 3.5 days we were there. And, I mean, literally the entire time, Rodney. It was out of hand. I don't think I've ever done that as much as we did that this recent trip. This was about maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago. And, dude, it was insane. It was pretty awesome. And it was our group's first foray with the Saga Edition rules, because I, you know, haven't been able to see these guys or really use the rule set. I've been able to play two new players through some other stuff, but I hadn't, you know, gotten my group together with that. We'd been using revised core rules before that, and we started a campaign like 6 years ago, and like I said, every time we're, you know, all in town together, we try to advance that story. But now we finally got to transfer all the characters over to Saga Edition, and everyone just loved it, man. I mean, honestly, you did an amazing job on that system. It's very much to all of our liking, and you really, man, incredible work.
Well, thank you. So, were you playing or were you running the game?
I was running the game. I've always been the game master, and it's really fun, man. I mean, it's with my group, it's easy because they all have such colorful characters. I mean, it's not like, you know, it'd be cool enough if they were a bunch of Star Wars space heroes or whatever, but no, these guys are like, you know, you got like a troubled Jedi and like a con man race pilot, a computer nerd, a college dropout gambler guy. My brother plays an actor, and that's his main concern is just getting acting gigs, but then he gets pulled into these galactic conflicts on the side. Another one's like a blue collar worker, you know, who has this just sort of go nowhere job, but then he gets sucked into all this stuff, and then you know, finally you have the soldier who keeps them all, you know, alive. You know, so like, you know, you can imagine with that group of players, it gets pretty entertaining because everyone's just got such a whacked out character.
Well, that sounds really great. So you worked on The Force Unleashed as a voice actor and motion cap and doing all the stuff to basically create your own Star Wars movie, and then you go off a few weeks ago and you play the Star Wars role-playing game for a whole weekend. Was there anything that you already have pulled from The Force Unleashed video game experience into your role-playing games or anything that you plan on implementing in your games in the future? Basically, was there anything from that whole experience from the time that you started work on Force Unleashed until the time it was done that gave you some new insights into something you could do for the role-playing game?
Well, you know, it's funny. There's not as much, you know, because I don't have the campaign guide yet, which, by the way, I love your cover.
Thank you.
There wasn't, you know, again, the time period that we're playing in takes place maybe 4 years before the Clone Wars, so there wasn't a lot of applicable stuff there, and they're kind of off doing their own thing. One interesting thing that took place is that the Jedi character ended up doing a very Force Unleashed-esque maneuver. They were attacked by this giant sort of, you know, incredibly giant monster, Rancor type creature, and I was pretty concerned that they were all going to get killed, because they split up the group and half of them went into this chamber with this thing, and I'm like, oh great, this is terrible. But you know, very much like my character in Force Unleashed, the Jedi charged up his move object. I can't remember whether it was with a destiny point or with a force point, but ended up lifting the damn thing off its feet and slamming it to the ground. And I'm like, ah, that looks familiar. I think I may have done that once or twice.
I'm sure that had to be gratifying.
Yeah, it was really funny. I didn't say anything at the time. I'm like, you know, I better be quiet about this. But, you know, because I want that to still be a surprise when he sees that in the game. But you know, there were certain things that characters did that I'm like, we did that in Force Unleashed. That's funny that they're sort of coming up with that. But in terms of Force Unleashed having a direct influence in the game, one of the coolest things is that we have Amy Beth Christensen, who's one of the lead concept artists on Force Unleashed, and she designed The Apprentice and all the costumes and a lot of the environments. And you know, she's just an amazing concept artist. As a matter of fact, if someone goes out and buys the art and making of The Force Unleashed, which is out in bookstores now, you can see a lot of her work. Anyway, she's going to be doing artwork for our game now, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is incredibly awesome, having your own personal artist working on the your role-playing game. That's I would argue that might be the dream player to have in your game.
She's not a player in our game. She's just a buddy of mine from Force Unleashed, and she, you know, I told her about what we were doing, and she's like, yeah, well, totally do art for you guys. What do you need? And I kind of came up with this dream list thinking that she'd pick one or two things to do, and she's like, I can do all that. I'm like, oh, okay, great. And if you've seen her work, I mean, it's really unbelievable, man. I mean, she's such an incredible artist. You know, I mean, there's a... You know, look, I think the concept artists in all the Star Wars movies were amazing, but I honestly think she's a notch above even the guys that were working on, like, Episode 3. She's just unbelievable with the type of stuff that she did. And, you know, if you walk around the LucasArts and Lucasfilm compound, on all of the walls are these, you know, huge 5-foot-long paintings that, you know, she and other concept artists did that just depict different Star Wars locales and different concepts. Really incredible stuff, man.
Wow.
I'm very, very excited that she's going to be creating art for us.
Yeah, it sounds like you've just made every Star Wars gamer listening to this podcast insanely jealous. So, congratulations.
Yeah, well, you know, what else is also cool is that one of the guys in my group, he develops technology for Walgreens, right? So he basically runs this team and figures out technological solutions to some of their problems. So one of the things that he's doing... is that he's developing custom software for our game. You know, developing HUD interfaces for the players. He's developing interactive character sheets where you can click on a skill and all the rules will come up right on the screen. He's developing a whole game master tool for me that will track initiative, hit points, you know, all kinds of just anything and everything. And he's going to add a web component to that. So yeah, it's my gaming group has become kind of ambitious. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah, you've just made me insanely jealous, so well done, sir. Well done.
You know, when it's done, I'll just send it to you, man.
Thank you.
Yours.
I do appreciate that. Now, I know that when we got to talk at Celebration, we talked a little bit about the Force Unleashed miniature set that we had come out last year, and among those minis were, of course, miniatures of the Secret Apprentice, whose likeness was based off of your own. So
yeah.
What was it like to finally get your hands on some little plastic pieces for the Star Wars Minis game that were, well, basically you in miniature form?
Hell of a lot of fun. Here in L.A., me and some of my actor friends who are also Star Wars fans played the Minis game, and yeah, it's always fun to sort of add your own character to your squad and start threatening the other players with it, you know. But then it's also fun when, I mean, you know, the first time I took the Secret Apprentice out for a spin, I went after someone's, you know, most powerful character, and I guess you charge up force points and then you can release.
Right.
You can release like one tier of lightning, or you could charge it up more and get like a more powerful tier or whatever. So I kept charging it up, and then the guy hit his saving throw, so I was just completely declawed and then just slaughtered. It was a pretty sad moment, but all the other times I've played him, it's been a little bit more successful than that.
Cool. Well, so I've got a few sort of rapid-fire questions I want to throw at you. Basically, just finding out a little bit more about your Star Wars gaming tastes and whatnot. So, first of all, you said that you get to game master more often than you get to play. So, in the characters that you have played in the past, what would you say is your favorite personal player character that you've had?
Well, you know, I haven't actually played a character for years. I've been like game mastering nonstop. As for what my favorite character is in like my game, I can't really play favorites in terms of all their personalities. But what I do enjoy is the fact that really any concept that these guys have come up with has fit really well into the rules that you designed. You know, I mean, like I said, my brother he's an actor. That's his thing. That's his gig, and that's fit really well into the rules. We got another guy who, you know, is basically just a computer nerd. That's fit really well into the rules. In my games, I enjoy the personality, and my players make it easy on me because, hey, you know, if there's not much going on in the game, just watching them do their thing is just hysterical because they're just really, really smart, really funny guys, you know, so. Their characters tend to, you know, get in all kinds of weird situations. And so, you know, all I got to do as a game master is sort of, like, keep up with them. So, you know, they're just kind of brilliant.
Well, sounds great. So could you pick either a favorite class or maybe a favorite alien species that you like to use in your games?
Hard to say, man. For me as a game master and, I guess as an actor as well, it's really fun to, you know, to create alien characters and play them with with those guys. There's this Trandoshan that runs around with them, and there's, you know, also a Wookiee that attacked them later. You know, it's always fun to bring out your Wookiee impression or whatever. I'd say my favorite stuff to do though is to bring in those iconic Star Wars characters and do my best impression of those characters, you know, in dialogue with the players. That's always really fun.
Yeah, so I was actually going to ask, when you mentioned, you know, game mastering a lot, I have to imagine that being a trained actor and a voice actor as well has to give you some kind of edge in your game mastering skills. Can you say if there's anything in particular that maybe, you know, new game masters or even veteran game masters could learn that you learned as a part of your acting career?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on how you game master, but for me there's a large part of improv going on, and you know, it's there are times where it doesn't go as well as you'd like it to go, and then there are times where just for whatever reason it's brilliant and all the dialogue is like, you know, amazing. And in terms of my actor training, it's basically just getting in and out of different characters and working that out quickly and putting on all kinds of different dialects or voices, and really just doing my best to give each NPC a distinct flavor so that, you know, the players are actually seeing something different rather than just some nameless, faceless guy who has some information to give them. You know, in a few cases, some of these NPCs have become part of their sort of crew, and I never really, you know, anticipated that, but that's part of the fun of it, is you never really know what these guys are going to decide to do or who they're going to decide to take with them. So definitely, yeah, I think if the actor training helps with anything, dude, it's probably just confidence to sort of go for it in certain cases, performance wise, and not feel that silly, since that's what I get paid for, you know? I mean, it's funny, man. It's like, I honestly look at the gaming thing. It's like, it's so similar to what I do as a job, you know? And what me and my friend, like, I have a lot of actor friends, and it's the same thing, man. You just go around, and in some cases, like on Battlestar Galactica, you are improvising on set. They actually encourage that. So you're, you know, I mean, some of that dialogue you see on that show is literally made up on set. These people are pretending to be in space doing all kinds of stupid shit, and they're getting paid a lot of money for it. And for gaming, it's just kind of like, well, hey, look, I love to do this. I get paid for it in real life, and I'm more than happy to not get paid for it and do it with my best friends. You know? And that's sort of the way I look at it.
Well, it sounds like, then, from what you're saying, that basically confidence in what you're doing as the game master, and then also the ability to adapt, are probably two of the most important things that you would say that game masters need to learn how to do to be successful.
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, I don't necessarily think that as a game master you have to be some brilliant, you know, improv actor. It certainly helps, but I think the biggest thing is to have a lot of imagination and be really adaptable, because there's nothing I've discovered that players dislike more than just, you know, feeling railroaded and feeling like they're being taken on a predetermined trip rather than determining it themselves. I mean, my players have spoken up quite a bit. You know, as I've matured in this hobby that I have, it's like I've gotten way more open-ended with my stories and stuff. And so many things happen that I just never, ever thought might happen, or never anticipated, never planned for. And they sense that, and that they enjoy that a hell of a lot more than when I discourage them from, you know, going in a certain direction, or even try to subtly discourage them by sending certain in-game characters and, you know, telling them to do this or telling them to do that. If I just let them do whatever they want, everything just goes extremely well. And again, you know, it might completely derail what you had planned, but really, you know, isn't that why you're gaming rather than playing a video game? I mean, you know, like video games, they have to plan for any eventual, you know, choice of the players, and it all has to be predetermined. So to a certain extent, you're always on a railroad, even though it's a branching railroad. With this, you have the advantage of having a human being running it. So, you know, it's like, take advantage of that. That's what it's all about. It's about creating this sort of imaginary world, letting your players run around in it, and if they really get the sense that they can go anywhere and do anything, you know, then they're going to have a lot more fun. They're going to have a lot more of a sense of wonder about that world, you know?
Yeah.
And my players, I think at this point, I think I like to think they do. I mean, they've said they do. I hope they're not lying.
Well,
so, you know, and it also, you know, it's like, and again, you know, I've heard you talk about stuff like when certain things happen, or there's like some sort of exploitive thing that happens on the part of the players, or something that really just shouldn't happen. There's almost always an in-game way of dealing with that. I heard on the Order 66 podcast, you talking about someone was in a bakery and took a thing of flour and threw it and created concealment, right?
Right.
And then, you know, the danger is, well, then the players are always going to be carrying around flour. It's like, well, yeah, but if you think about it, the reason people wouldn't be carrying around flour is cumbersome. It's hard to carry a big sack of flour everywhere, and you know, people are going to be asking you why you're carrying that flower. It's going to get in the way. It's going to slow you down. It might, you know, hurt your character's ability to run around and run and gun. You know, it's like there's almost always an in-game way that you can deal with someone doing something that they probably shouldn't be doing, you know, considering they really in real life shouldn't be doing that. I mean, real life, it's all relative, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I think those are all perfectly good points, and I actually couldn't agree more. So right now what I want to do is actually... you've been kind enough to come on the podcast here and do an interview for me. So what I'd like to do is give you the chance to tell me what you would like to see in the future of the Star Wars role-playing game. What would Sam Witwer, famous actor / game master, like to see in the Star Wars role-playing game Saga Edition source books coming out in the future?
Oh, dude. That's a big question. You know what? Something that occurred to me when I was playing is, you know, obviously the more you play, the more you become familiar with the rules and what the various feats and talents are and all that. One thing, I've talked to you about this, Rodney. Like, I very much prefer the Saga Edition rules to, say, the 4th Edition D&D rules. Although I respect those rules, and I see, like, my God, so much brilliance went into this, and, you know, but I prefer the Saga Edition rules. I prefer something that's a little bit more loosey and running, you know, run and gun, and basically, you know, something that doesn't dictate your action, you know, in the flavor text, something that allows, you know, the players to essentially dictate their actions, rather than, you know, you have a talent where you pick up a piece of, you know, sand, and, you know, you pick up some sand and throw it in their eyes, and it's like, well, what does that mean? If it means you don't have the talent to pick up sand and throw it at someone's eyes, you could never do that, or you would try and you would fail. You know, that type of thing doesn't really do it for me, if you follow what I'm saying.
Sure.
But what I do like about what they've been doing in the D&D Monster Manual is that in their stat blocks, there's very clearly laid out abilities, and it's all spelled out, like, it's like screaming at you. It's like the strategy is sort of in the stat block in terms of how to play that creature or that character. And I'm on your side, Rodney, with the whole give NPCs special abilities thing.
Well, I'm glad to hear that I have your support.
Thinking, because as a game master, sometimes you're flipping through and you're like, okay, well, I need a character who can do this. So you look through Threats of the Galaxy and you have these awesome laid out characters, but offhand I might not know what, you know, Devastating Attack does, or what this does, or what that does, and I don't have time to look it up, you know. So to have in the stat blocks literally descriptions that scream out at me what this ability does or what that ability does would be really useful.
No, I can totally understand that. One of the things that we really try to do is make it easier for a game master to jump in and prep for a game quickly and run a combat encounter or what have you without having to do a whole bunch of page flipping or a whole bunch of pre-game preparation. So I will definitely take that under consideration in the future. And, you know, don't be surprised if that kind of suggestion appears somewhere down the line.
Now, again, having said that, I think I haven't read all of the debate on this, but I think that you were spearheading some sort of movement where you're saying, you know, NPCs should have other little abilities that maybe weren't congruent with player abilities, and I totally agree with you. I feel like they're there to serve their story purpose, and that's that. And if they serve more of a story purpose, that's great, but in any case, you know, why can't I, you know, why can't these Stormtrooper recruits have an ability where they're, you know, they pop off more shots, you know, than a normal Stormtrooper, only less accurately. Or, you know what I mean? Like, why can't I? You know, it's my game.
Well, sure. And obviously that's one of the big things that the Game Master can do. And I wouldn't really say I was spearheading any kind of movement like that before you get me in too much trouble with the other camp. Although, like I say, I'm always open to new suggestions and new ideas as far as game design goes. So it's good to know that, you know, some people like that idea, and then some people want the more traditional character building method. So
I can see both sides, because you don't want anything to get terribly unbalanced. But, you know, again, all in all, man, it's, you know, in terms of what I'd want to see, just more of what you're putting out. I got to tell you, I really feel like the books you guys have been putting out have been just of extremely high quality. I think they've been amazing.
Well, thank you, and I really appreciate that. So before we let you go, I want to give you the opportunity to tell us what we can look forward to in your future. You mentioned that you're going to be on Smallville, which I'm really looking forward to, because it's no secret that I watch Smallville every week. So what else can we look forward to seeing you in, you know, that you can talk about in the next few months?
Well, I can talk about, there's a couple movies I might be participating in, but I don't know as of yet, so I might as well not talk about that.
Yeah, probably don't want to get in trouble.
I'm going to show up in a nice little cameo in a movie called Game with Gerard Butler and Michael C. Hall. So that'll be really fun. But yeah, in terms of the Smallville thing, we're just trucking along and shooting, and it's going really well. It's going really fast. I mean, we're already shooting our seventh episode, and I feel like we just started. So that's going really well. The whole arc for the Davis Bloom character is certainly very interesting. It's already starting to pay off. in terms of my interest in the character. And
cool.
So that's good news, because, you know, again, I wasn't that familiar with Smallville when they offered me the role. I was just kind of called in, and the producers talked to me, and I was like, okay, well, that sounds like a really cool story. All right, you want to play this guy? All right, cool. And, you know, but I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, and I'm very happy to report that there's some really psychologically twisted stuff coming. Pretty much the darkest stuff Smallville's ever done.
Wow, and, you know, Smallville does some dark stuff, so I guess probably having played The Secret Apprentice, you were pretty well prepared for playing another villainous character, so...
Well, as you know, Rodney, the Secret Apprentice isn't a straight villain. As you know, there's a lot of ways you could describe that character, and I don't want to give anything away, obviously,
sure.
But, you know, that character makes a very profound impact on the Star Wars mythos, and when it comes to Smallville, the fun thing about that character and the way that, you know, what they pitched to me and what they're so far delivering on is that he's this really awesome, cool guy who just happens to be destined to be Doomsday, which is the only character who ever killed Superman in, you know, in the Superman mythology.
Right.
So, you know, I think I'm visiting the various franchises, and then after that, you know, who knows? Other than that, man, I'm just like recording another album, which is a lot of fun, and it's even more fun because some of the guys that play in my band are pretty crazy. For example, Glenn Howerton from Always Sunny in Philadelphia,
right,
is in my band. Another guy named Brian Taylor, who is the co-writer and co-director of the movie called Crank, and he also is doing Game and Crank 2. And he's one of the guitarists in my band. So we, you know, when things calm down in Hollywood, we all get together and play gigs here and there. But other than that, I'm just, you know, trying to find the time to record more for this album. And again, you know, Hollywood stuff's a little bit busy for me right now, so it's not going as fast as I'd like it to, but it's coming along.
Wow, that sounds like you're doing really well then. I guess that's about all we've got for you today. I just wanted to say thanks again for coming on the show. It was great to get to talk to you again. And next time you're up in the great Pacific Northwest, feel free to swing by Seattle, and we'll maybe play some Star Wars.
That'd be fun, man. I'd really love to. And, dude, again, let me express my gratitude. I really think you nailed it with the system.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, Sam. And I guess we'll let you go. But have fun in the future, and good luck with all your acting gigs.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, now we'd like to reach back into our mailbag and answer a few questions that we've received since our last podcast. Matt from New York City writes, "What do you think about using major NPCs from the canon? It seems very tempting to throw the PCs in the mix with some of the big bads from the universe, but it also seems a bit dangerous. I mean, what if they accidentally kill Jabba the Hutt before Episode 6? Would that leave Salacious Crumb as a crime lord on Tatooine?" Matt, I think this is actually a really good question, and something I had to answer myself when we were doing the outline for the Dawn of Defiance campaign. Although, for me, it was actually trying to figure out how to throw a major villain into the mix without having him immediately killed, and then try and mess with the storyline for the next 9 adventures to follow. So one of the things I did, and this actually can apply to your major characters from the Star Wars universe just as well as your big bads, but one of the things I did was I sat down with a good friend of mine, Eric Mona, who was the editor-in-chief of Dungeon at the time that they did the Age of Worms adventure path. And I asked Eric how he would recommend introducing villains early on in a campaign that stay for a while. Now, obviously, for your purposes, you want to know how to introduce major characters from canon that can stick around for a while without getting whacked by the players. Star Wars actually presents a few options that Eric pointed out to me as much more amenable to keeping characters around for a while, even if the heroes try and intervene with them. So one of the things that you can do is use the technology of Star Wars to really make it seem like they're in part of the Star Wars universe without having them being able to mess with canon. For example, if you want to have the players interact with Jabba the Hutt, have Jabba the Hutt appear via hologram, or over a video line, or over just a simple comm link, or even have Jabba send one of his serving droids to the heroes with a message. This way, you've taken a piece of the Star Wars universe and integrated it into your campaign in a way that's not dangerous to canon. The other way you can do this is to have these famous characters appear as allies of the party instead of antagonists. For example, Bail Organa appears in the Dawn of Defiance campaign, and obviously he's a major character from the films as well, and had a lot to do with the foundation of the Rebellion, and obviously the raising of Princess Leia. Well, the players are much less likely to want to mess with canon if it's someone that's on their side as well. This also goes a long way to making your players feel like they've really been immersed in the Star Wars universe because, you know, they're heroes and they go out and they see that, hey, this is Bail Organa. He was a major character in the movies and my player is talking to him. I'm going on missions for Bail Organa, and it makes me feel like what I do integrates seamlessly in with the rest of the Star Wars saga. Now, also, another thing you can do is simply take canon and throw it right out the window and have your players be able to change as much as they like. I know a lot of players and game masters like this sort of Infinity-style campaign where they take the common and familiar elements of the Star Wars saga and then run off in whatever direction they like with them. So those are two options that I think, or actually three options, that I think work well for introducing major characters into your games without interrupting canon. Mike writes, are you currently playing or running a Star Wars campaign, and if so, which era? So this is actually something that is relatively recently changed. I had been running the Dawn of Defiance campaign, but have wrapped that up and have started a new campaign. I'm actually starting a campaign set in the far future of Star Wars, in the Legacy era, where my players are smugglers who will be on board their own ships, sort of a Millennium Falcon-style ship, in the future of Star Wars, taking on Sith Lords and dealing with the Imperial Remnant, Empire in Exile, run by Rowan Fell, and basically setting their own way in the universe on the fringes of the galaxy during that time period. So we're looking forward to firing that up. My actually first session is coming up here in less than a week, so I'll be sure to give you guys an update on how that goes in the future. He also asks, what other games are you playing if not Star Wars? I play D&D on Wednesday nights, but I also play a lot of board games. Board games are actually really popular among a lot of the designers here at Wizards of the Coast, and most people who work in R&D have at least some passing familiarity with a lot of the European-style board games or the more modern-style board games. Asks, do you mainly stick to Wizards of the Coast games, or do you try out other system games by other companies? This is actually something I think is really important for a game designer, and then also for people who like to game master and create their own rules. I think it's important to play games by a lot of different companies in a lot of different styles. Even games that you don't think you'll like, there's always something that can be learned from playing a game like that. So don't be afraid to try out, you know, if you don't play collectible card games, don't be afraid to try one out if your friends have it and want you to, right? You may not like the experience, but chances are you will actually learn something from it about gameplay or game design decisions that you can then use later when you're running your own game and creating your own house rules. And the last thing he asked was, how big of an influence do you think D&D and Star Wars have on one another as RPGs? This is something I actually talked about in the recent D&D podcast, but the answer is a fair amount philosophically, but specifically and mechanically, not a whole lot. Obviously, the Star Wars role-playing game Saga Edition served as sort of a testbed for a lot of ideas that were used in 4th edition D&D, and then, of course, since the release of 4th edition, there have been a lot of things that we've learned that I've tried to import back into the Star Wars role-playing game. I doubt you'll see a lot of direct crossover between Star Wars and D&D mechanics, but certainly there are a lot of really great ideas that transcend genres, whether it's the fantasy genre of D&D or the space opera genre of Star Wars, that we can use, you know, regardless of what kind of game we're creating. So keep an eye out for little lessons that have been learned from D&D, and then also keep an eye out in D&D for things that have been learned for Star Wars. We all work in basically one big design area, and there's a big free exchange of ideas going on at all times between the different designers, so that's one good way that we have of making our own games better, is just listening to one another and talking out problems we might encounter or trying to find solutions to issues that maybe I can't solve alone, so I go to the D&D guys and they offer suggestions, and then those suggestions in turn get tweaked to fit Star Wars. As is the destiny of all good things, it's time for this podcast to come to an end. Don't forget to tell your friends and fellow Star Wars fans about this podcast, which you can download for free from www.wizards.com/Star Wars. And remember, if you have any questions you'd like to hear answered in our mailbag segment, you can send them to swfeedback@wizards.com, and we'll do our best to answer any that we can. This concludes this episode of the podcast. Thanks for listening, and may the Force be with you.